reconvene the July 28th meeting of the Marine Resources Commission. Let the record show it's 1:30. It's after lunch hour, but we are continuing with our habitat management caseload here. We've reached agenda item number nine. It's a public hearing here concerning living shorelines. Mr. Nyker.
Good afternoon. Some of you will recall that last month we had a request for a public hearing this month, and we are now holding that public hearing. This is the first of two public hearings on, or the first of, first, this is the public hearing of the first of two general permits. Notices were run in five newspapers throughout the Tidewater area, and we received several written comments. Since we do have some newly appointed commissioners and there may be some interested parties in the audience, I'm going to briefly go through the history of it again like I did last month, and then I will go to the comments. Also, if you, as you're following along, the newer draft of the general permit that's in your book does have some underlined areas where we've made changes from the way it was last month. And I have also added two items in the back of your tab. I believe it's number nine. That we received just yesterday, one from the chairman of the Middlesex Wetland Board and one from the Nature Conservancy. Both were generally in support of the project. Nature Conservancy was in support, didn't make any recommendations. The Middlesex Board had a couple of comments. A little history. Under Senate Resolution 35 back in 2010, the General Assembly requested VIMS to conduct a study of tidal shoreline management in Virginia and to recommend methods to streamline regulation, encourage living shoreline methods and recommendations to provide for sustained protection of the tidal shoreline resources. The results of that study were reported in Senate Document 16. Then in 2011, Senate Bill 964 was enacted to implement several of those recommendations. Among other things, the bill defined the term living shorelines and directed VMRC to develop a general permit process to encourage living shorelines and promote the integrated guidance to promote and coordinate management of shorelines across existing jurisdictional boundaries. This is the first of two general permits to address that. As we were developing the general permit, it became apparent that the legislation may not provide the ability to develop a general permit process that was applicable to both VMRC and the wetland boards. For the general permit process to effectively streamline the regulatory review, it would have to be applicable to both bodies. It would make it serve no purpose for one to be slower than the other. So we sought legislation in 2014 to address that issue. And that was approved. This is the definition of a living shoreline. It provides erosion control and water quality benefits. It has to protect, restore, or enhance natural shoreline habitat, maintain coastal processes through the strategic placement of plants, stone, sand fill, and other structural and organic materials. It's a pretty broad definition. And it would encompass a large variety of projects. As we were looking at general permits, though, we realized right off the bat that it wasn't going to be able to address all types of living shorelines. Some of them are so site-specific and require a great deal of review, such as breakwaters. So we came up with the concept of developing two general permits, one called Group 1 and another one called Group 2, and this is for the Group 1. We solicited a great deal of input. From the outset, we briefed all wetland boards on the legislation and solicited their input on what they might like to see in the way of a general permit. We also formed two work groups, what we call the technical work group, which was comprised of the agencies that were specifically listed in the legislation, those being VMRC, VIMS, Department of Conservation and Recreation, and Corps of Engineers. We also developed an advisory committee, which we considered to be more the users of the legislation. That would be wetland board members, contractors, agents and applicants. We also had a few NGOs represented. Just as an example of a shoreline project, this was in Gloucester County just about a year ago. It was a larger project. It had sills that are at my back right now, sill breakwater type structures. But here in the background is an oyster shell bag sill, which would be something that would be authorized under this general permit group one. And of course, the planning and the sand fill. And that's it just 6 months later. It is wintertime, so it's brown, but you can see how the vegetation really took off in just a six-month period. Both committees expressed a concern from the outset that the general permit should not encourage the use of certain living shoreline and a certain living shoreline type in an area where it's not appropriate. The fear being that even a few failed projects could give a living shoreline concept a bad name and would be counterproductive to promoting these techniques. Accordingly, we had to walk a fine line between developing a general permit that was broad enough to be useful, but limited to the point that it would be both effective and have a limited potential for impacting adjoining property owners and the general public. From the outset, general permits will not cover all types of living shoreline projects, and just because it's not covered by a general permit doesn't mean it might not be the appropriate structure at that place. It's just that it is something that we didn't feel could be accommodated under the general permit process. The two types will be the group one, which is essentially just a wetland enhancement. It would allow the placement of sand fill, structures like core logs, now core mats, that was an addition we made, and oyster shell bags, and it would be basically to enhance that intertidal area to facilitate the growth of vegetation. Concept is it would be a streamlined procedure. We're recommending that the fees be eliminated. There is still a review at the local level and at the state level, and both would have the ability to say nay on using the general permit process. Group one, which is what we're here today on, it would allow the placement of fiber logs and shell bags, maximum fetch of a half a mile. It's confined to areas above mean low water, so this doesn't involve any areas out beyond mean low water yet. Those will be covered under group two, which will be coming in hopefully a few months. It would allow sand fill to enhance the planting area. Procedures will be, right now, a standard application would need to be submitted. We may develop an abbreviated permit or application in the future. It will be reviewed concurrently by VMRC and the Wetland Board. Provided both the Wetland Board and VMRC determine the application is sufficiently complete, meets the permit conditions, and concur with the use of the process, VMRC shall issue the permit. So we're looking at a 21-day period there. If either the Wetland Board or VMRC determines the application is not complete, we'll give the applicant a chance to address those deficiencies in the application, but it's not, the clock stops at that point. So either party can say, we need more information on the application. There will be some minimal monitoring required, we're recommending. Monitoring report following the planting and then 1 year after that, and there would be no permit fee. There is a maintenance provision, certain maintenance activities that can occur beyond the limit of the permit, expiration of the permit. And given the limited potential for this type of activity to adverse both the environment and adjoining property owners, there's no public notice or notification of adjoining property owners required. I'd like to summarize the comments we received. One of them was that noted that the common reed, Phragmites australis, should not be allowed to be planted or considered as appropriate vegetation. Reason that comes up is Phragmites is listed as a wetland plant in the wetlands ordinance, and we said that you have to use a wetland species that's listed in the ordinance as one of the conditions. What we have recommended on the bottom of page 4 a statement that says Phragmites shall not typically be considered appropriate wetland vegetation for planting purposes. The reason we worded it that way is we don't want to allow someone to plant frag under the general permit, but we don't want to discourage an individual from constructing a living shoreline in an already impacted area where frag is already present and likely to invade, since it's still a better alternative than just a hardened shoreline. That was our rationale for the wording that we chose there. So essentially, if you're along a shoreline, you got frag on both sides, and you've got an option of either going bulkhead or a living shoreline, we still want that person to have the option to go in with the living shoreline. We'd like them to plant Spartina for the most part, but if it invades, we don't want to make them have to go back in and plant Spartina over and over again if it's not going to be successful. One of the comments said that we should allow sand to be replaced at appropriate elevations as maintenance activity. We have incorporated that on page 5. Fiber logs should not be limited to their use in a sill. That was the way it was worded. There are other places within the intertidal zone where the fiber logs can be used, and also a comment that fiber mats should also be used. And we concurred with both of those, and that has also been incorporated on page 5. Specific criteria concerning concrete structures should be changed to clarify that the permit does not authorize either concrete or concrete with incorporated shells. We actually eliminated that condition, and it was not to allow for those types of structures. It was based on a recommendation that we don't need to list things that are not allowed in the general permit. So we have taken that out. So we incorporated all those top four. The rest of them here, we have recommended not incorporating, at least at this point. That would be, should allow for modular concrete structures like oyster castles. We got that from several folks. This permit is confined to the intertidal zone and is generally structures that are, fiber logs, oyster shell bags, very small, minimal, don't have an impact on adjoining property owners. Oyster castles are typically out at or beyond mean low water, so it is something we've told folks we're going to take a close look at under the Group 2, and it might be something we can incorporate into the Group 2. Several organizations commented that VMRC should review the applications for completeness before sending to the Wetland Board. We feel like that could delay the process. The way we have laid it out is that both organizations can review it concurrently. Either one can kick it out. The 21 days will stop, we think it'll probably be a quicker process, allowing both to review at the same time. We also received several comments that the permit should be longer than 2 years. Don't have a real heartburn with that, but we felt 2 years was probably appropriate for this level of project. And we also, keep in mind that there is a provision in there where we can administratively extend the permit just upon a written request. And with the basically a year and a half's worth of monitoring afterwards, just keeping up with these projects for such a long period of time, we'd kind of like to keep it at 2 years. We received a comment that the application should state that the cultivation of shellfish is allowed under the existing wetlands ordinance. We kind of feel like that might be something better for guidance. I don't know that necessarily needs to be included in the general permit. And also, purpose should be revised to include the promotion of shellfish growth. That really wasn't the intent of the general permit or the legislation enabling it, although it's a collateral benefit, I think, and that might also be something that we can mention in some guidance documents. Same with the next one in placement of oyster culch. Couple of organizations said there should be a provision for the locality or VMRC to require an application fee. Time it takes to get a permit now is not that long when we receive a complete application, generally on the order of you know, 4 to 6 weeks for a wetland project. And we've shortened this down to 3 weeks, so we've saved a little bit of time. We felt like the elimination of the application fee was another way to provide an incentive for this type of project. There's a recommendation that organic should be mixed with the sand to facilitate better vegetated growth. That's true. It would help the vegetation. The current requirement in there is that it has to be 90% sand, so that does allow for some organics. It doesn't have to be clean, washed, you know, masonry type sand. But if someone has access to that, don't want to prevent that. And that project that I showed you right there at Gloucester, that was on clean washed sand, so it, you know, the vegetation will take. Replacement of fiber logs in the exact same location may be difficult, and we should add the word practical. I think we'll have some latitude with the replacement of fiber logs. I don't know that necessarily needs to be. And interestingly, you know, you never know what kind of comments you're going to get. The use of chair should be used instead of chairman. I'd never even thought about that. We don't have a problem with that. We used chairman because that's what's in the wetlands ordinance currently. If y'all feel like it should be chair, we can certainly make that change. It also went through our regulatory review committee. We did all of these items. We reviewed the use of commission versus commissioner and changed it to commissioner or commission in all places except for three, where it refers to the actual issuance of the permit and administration of the process, which we left as commissioner or his designee. We clarified the definition of commission to more clearly indicate the usage refers to agency versus the board. We removed specific criterion number 4, which stated the permit does not authorize the placement of concrete structures with incorporated shell. Again, that was because we don't need to list things that it doesn't authorize. And we also included a statement reinforcing the fact that enforcement and penalty provisions already contained in the wetlands law are applicable to activities conducted under this general permit. And we also received a couple comments from the office of the AG. And that was defined commission and VMRC as the professional staff of VMRC, of the Virginia Marine Resources Commission. We do recommend doing that. I did not have a chance to update that version of the document, and also to change one other sentence. I had said specifically including Army Corps of Engineers and this just says including those, and we recommend you any approval include both of those items as well, and we could update that before we bring it for signature. I know we do have some folks here that would like to comment on it. I'm happy to answer any questions.
My next question is there any questions from the commission? Mr. Tankard.
When you mentioned fiber logs, fiber mat, is there any concern that you may have bringing in an invasive species, say if this thing comes, fiber mats are produced in China or somewhere?
It hadn't come up before, and we didn't specify a particular manufacturer. I don't know if that's been an issue before, mm-hmm. but something to keep an eye out mm-hmm. for. It's typically the core logs, which are what we're talking about here, which is it's a coconut fiber.
Mr. Erskine.
Chip, when you were talking about the shell bags, are you talking the standard black polyethylene stretch
material? These are actually about a 1-inch mesh fine nylon, and it comes in a tube, and you actually fill them and tie them at both ends to make a bag.
So it's not biodegradable.
There was mention of using our regulation mentions if available biodegradable mm-hmm. bags. There's not a whole lot of materials out there that they've used yet in this, and the concern with biodegradable is how fast is it going to degrade? You know, if it degrades too fast, you end up with just a pile of shell mm-hmm. out there. But we do have in there if available and appropriate, you know, biodegradable bags.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions from the commission? Chip, I know you've worked really long and very hard on this for a number of years, and I think your efforts have borne fruit here. What you've put together here, I think, is very solid.
Thanks.
I appreciate it.
One more to come.
Yeah, your work isn't done yet. This is a public hearing. So anybody wish to be heard on this matter, either in favor or against, or any sort of comments at all? Seeing none, the public hearing is closed. There is one. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, please come forward. I didn't see you behind the podium there. Please state your name for the record. I don't need to swear yet.
Pamela Bitwright with the Elizabeth River Project. I'm sorry, I'm reiterating what you said, but we really want to thank you for the opportunity to comment, and we commend BMRC for supporting the permit process for Living Shorelines. And we just feel a couple of things could be refined, as in allowing the BMRC staff to review the applications for complete lists before going to the local wetlands board, and to consider adding the oyster structures to group one to incorporate this new hybrid approach that can further reduce shoreline erosion, which is such a major issue, and also allow for restoration of a greater diversity of habitats. And we encourage you to increase the length of the permit from 2 years to at least 3 years to allow flexibility to address optimal growing seasons and other funding issues. And again, we want to thank you for your leadership and your partnership role in restoring the Elizabeth River.
Thank you very much, Pam. Does anybody else wish to be heard on this matter? Seeing none, the public hearing is closed. The matter is before the commission for discussion and action. What's your preference, ladies and gentlemen? Mr. Erskine.
Well, I guess I just had a comment with regards to the Oyster Castle concept. And, I certainly support the concept of using an Oyster Castle, but the ones I've seen in the past are not really that low profile. You know, they can be higher profile, and I don't think it belongs in what we're talking about here. Possibly that group two would have something like that, but it causes a little bit more of an obstruction, I guess, and I don't think should be, in my opinion, part of this general permit.
Any other comments or discussion? Well, matters before the commission. What's your preference?
I move to approve staff recommendation.
Motion by Mr. Neal here to approve the staff recommendation.
Second.
Second by Ms. Haney. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes? The chair votes aye as well. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you very much.